So he's put his ethical and philosophical approach to discussions of disability and the eating of meat and killing of animals for the food supply. Now, Peter Singer, Professor Peter Singer, has a new book called The Life You Can Save. It's about the capacity of human beings in the civilized world to, in fact, end world hunger. In church congregations around the world, they refer to the Millennium agenda of Dr. Jeffrey Sachs, which calls for the ending of extreme poverty in our lifetime. First of all, Peter Singer, thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
thank
John.
You.
Good. Thanks for
and,
with you.
And your book, The Life You Can Save, suggests that it is possible for us to take actual concrete steps, both individually and in communities, that will have the effect of ending extreme poverty. Why do you think that is the case?
Because if you look at the amount of wealth we have and you suggest realistic scales for donation, which I do in the book, we could produce sums that are greatly in excess of what Jeffrey Sachs, for example, calculates is needed to meet the Millennium Development Goals. Now, that only halves the proportion of the world's people living in extreme poverty. But I think from then we could continue to go further. Now, I'm not saying there'll be no poverty at all, no extreme poverty. Obviously, there will be pockets of it here or there. There'll be particular repressive governments where we can't really help, or civil wars. But I don't think there have to be a billion people living in extreme poverty throughout the world. I think we can stop that if we want to.
And in general, the mechanism for this is a huge-scale wealth transfer from the wealthy in the world, who you say are more numerous than ever before, just like the number of people in extreme poverty, to the people in extreme poverty, and that should be accomplished by essentially a voluntary system of tithing, appealing to people's morality, and that is possibly going to be more effective than any sort of imposed wealth transfer. And we argue about that a lot in American politics.
Yes, but I think in the United States, at least, this may not be true for every country. Our government foreign aid program has not been nearly as effective dollar for dollar as the amounts that go through NGOs. And so that's why I think that we should be increasing this. Now, if I could just correct one thing, I'm not suggesting tithing for everyone. I have a scale, which is in the book and also on my website, which has the same title as the book, thelifeyoucansave.com. And it starts at 1%. In fact, for 90% of Americans, I'm suggesting just a 1% donation. And only when you get into the top 10% of U.S. taxpayers does it start rising towards tithing. So that's what's surprising in a way, that we don't have to give so much. You know, you talk about it as a big wealth transfer, but it's not as a percentage of our wealth, it's not so much. It is a big increase on the amount of foreign aid we're giving now, because that's actually really quite tiny.
Peter, what about the question of accountability? I mean, here in the U.S., we've had, in addition to the financial scandals, we've also had questions about what charitable organizations do in certain cases. Is the money being spent well? Is it being spent badly? You know, there are ratios you can look at to see how much of the money is actually going to direct action. But I'm not sure how many people who make donations do that, particularly, for example, a lot of wealth is tithed through religious organizations, and people there have a very personal standpoint on who they're giving to. So even if you get people to tithe or to give, how can you be accountable for where that money goes?
Well, I think we do need to give to effective organizations, and we need to have more public information about which are effective. And it's not just about the percentage of their money that goes through administration, because an effective organization needs to spend something on administration. And sometimes cutting back too much on administration can make you less effective at making sure that your money is going to the right projects. But we are starting to get places where people can have a look at that. There's a website I refer to called givewell.net, where people can look at some assessment of some of the more effective organizations. And we need more of that. We need that to be out there in public. We need to be talking about which organizations are really doing the best job so that people can know where to give.
Isn't there a bit of an illusion at work here in the sense that if you do the math slowly, 1% donation doesn't seem like a lot. Then if you have the sliding scale, as you have in the book and on the website, the sacrifices do seem minimal individual to individual. But certainly you're not saying that a essentially painless sacrifice is all that's required by the people in the developed world to end world poverty, something that we've never even gotten close to in all of world history?
I am saying that the wealth of the affluent world is such that it would not really be a huge sacrifice. I mean, I don't think we would miss it. And for many people, perhaps most, I think we would find a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction with what we're doing. It was much more important than the fact that, you know, we're giving up the second flat-screen TV for the bedroom or whatever it might be that we don't buy now.
Do you have two flat-screen TVs?
I actually don't have any TVs.
Any TVs, I see. Here's a question. You've gotten some controversial criticism on the part of people with disabilities for positing in some of your earlier work that there was a point beneath which a human being was so disabled that they could not expect to live anything like a satisfying life, and that would possibly justify their elimination by their parents, either in the form of some sort of euthanizing procedure, not necessarily after they were born, but possibly in vitro. Is it conceivable you could draw the same argument for people in extreme poverty whose lives are below some threshold where they couldn't possibly have a fulfilling life? And I'm wondering why you didn't draw it there.
Well, I didn't actually draw a line quite like that with people with disabilities either. What I did was I suggested that parents, in consultation with healthcare professionals, their doctors, should sometimes be able to make a decision that it was better that that infant should die. If there were parents living in extreme poverty who felt that they could not help their child, that their child was simply going to starve, maybe euthanasia could be conceivable, but generally, that's not what parents in extreme poverty want. They want to help their child. They want to get help so their children can live.
Just briefly, there is a woman who's being called the anti-Bono for a book called Dead Aid that argues that it's Western aid and the celebrity culture of Western aid and, even books like yours they're throwing off the path to self-sufficiency. What do you think of that?
She's actually arguing against government and World Bank aid. If you take a look within the first few pages, she says that she's not really addressing aid through non-government agencies. So I think in a way she's agreeing with me that they're more effective. I do agree with her point that we must avoid making people dependent on aid. We have to have smart aid which helps people to become independent and sustainable.
Well, the book is To Save the Life You Can Save. There's also a website, thelifeyoucansave.org. Peter Singer is the Ira W. DeCamp Professor of Bioethics at Princeton University. Professor, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much. It's been great talking to you.